If you see a little bit of a mess with my notes in front of me, you can look at these two. What a mess this is. Also the price of using a fountain pen. It's because we thought we will again record outdoors as usual, fully outdoors. But we didn't realize that for once, Met Department's promise at least will be partly kept. They've been promising us the monsoon now for a month. So at least we got a drizzle today. And that drizzle shows exactly the moment that when I started recording Cut the Clutter and messed up my notes. So here we are. After the explanation, let me tell you what we are talking about today. We are talking about Uttar Pradesh's new population policy. So two things have happened in Uttar Pradesh and that we need for clarity. In fact, there is clutter. For example, when you ask people, when people see, oh, Uttar Pradesh has a new policy on population, they also see Uttar Pradesh has a new law on population. So they think it's the same thing. It is not the same thing. These are two separate things. So just for clarity, the law has been drafted by the Uttar Pradesh Law Commission, the State Law Commission, which is supposedly constitutionally an autonomous body, does not take orders from the state government, but that is the constitutional position, de facto position. We know that many of these organizations or many of these institutions take the cue from the government, but that goes in the area of editorializing or giving opinion. So technically, constitutionally, it is the UP State Law Commission, an autonomous body which has no right to pass any law. Law has to be passed by the Legislative Assembly, not by the Law Commission. But they have proposed a draft law. So that is the law on which they've asked for public comments by July 19. The deadline seems to be a bit short. But then you also know the other issue, the deadline for the elections also is coming up now in Uttar Pradesh. In the state, that is less than 6 months away now. So a lot of these things happen. I keep telling you, nothing happens without a reason. Bina karan koi baat nahi hoti. So you can see that this is timed with that. The second thing that's happened is that UP government, the Yogi government in Uttar Pradesh, has come up with its own population policy timed with the World Population Day. So well timed. And they have said that today their fertility rate, the fertility rate means the average number of babies a woman would produce in her fertile age. It used to be 18 to 44 earlier. Now it's taken, say, 18 to 49. So number of babies an average woman will produce in her fertile life cycle. That in Uttar Pradesh right now is 2.7. India's national average is between 2.2, 2.3, and it's declining. Uttar Pradesh, on the other hand, has among the highest in the country. Actually, Bihar has that dubious honor. Also, little Meghalaya is quite high, but Meghalaya is much too small to weigh on the national figures. But UP has 2.7. So this policy says that we aim to bring this figure of 2.7 to 2.1 by 2026 and to 1.9 by 2030. Now that is an ambitious project given the fact that UP has a very large population. UP's population, I keep telling you, is exactly the same size as Pakistan's, also growing, unfortunately, at the same pace, which is almost twice as high as the pace of all of India averaged out. So UP has a problem. If UP was a country, it would be the eighth largest population in the world. So India's own future of population figures, population control, population discipline depends on how UP and Bihar are able to manage it. Now, over the years, India has been making progress. Now, if I look at National Family Health Survey data and I look at other data that's combined by the, that is compiled by the Ministry of Health and by Niti Aayog, I can say see that between 1981 and 2011, that is 30 years, 2011 was the last census. We know that 2021 census is delayed because of corona. If I see that data, then I can see in 1981, India's average fertility rate, babies produced per woman in her fertile age, was 4.5, right? That means two women, between them, produced 9 babies on an average, a lot. It was much higher in 1961, I think it was upwards of 6, but let's leave that aside. So 4.5 in 1981, all India in 2011 was about 2.35 or thereabouts. So this had nearly halved from 4.5. So India made a big progress in those 30 years. But this progress was mixed, and it was also varied from state to state. So over 40 years, India has come from 4.5 babies per woman. That means two women in 1981 would produce 9 babies between them. That has now been reduced to 2.3. That means 3 women together will produce about 8 children. In fact, less than 8 children. Maybe 4 women together will produce 9 children. Similarly, all other states have also declined, but this performance is very diverse. Bihar has come down from 5.7 to 3, so it's also come down to nearly half, but it's still much higher than the rest of India. UP has come down to about 2.7, 2.8 from 5.8. Again, it has halved, but much higher than the rest of India. Rajasthan from 5.2 to about 2.6. And similarly, you can see if you go to, say, Madhya Pradesh, 2.7 from 5.2. So what is the pattern that we see? The pattern that we see is that it is the Hindi heartland states. It is the Hindi heartland states that are laggard in India in all other areas, from the economy to incomes to social indicators. But they are the tops in producing more babies. So there must lie some lesson there. These are also the states which, unfortunately, I know that I don't like that usage, but unfortunately, these have been called Bimaru states: Bihar, Madhya Pradesh, Rajasthan, Uttar Pradesh. But the fact is that if you see the performance on population, on the other hand, see states that have done well. Now, Assam is seen as a usual suspect because of the talk of infiltration, and also it has a high Muslim population. And the reason this is becoming such a big issue, or being made such a big issue in Uttar Pradesh in the lead up to the elections, also is because this is a dog whistle to say that it is the Muslims who produce too many babies, too many children, and add to our population, India's population. So this is an indirect way of reminding people of that. That's why I said dog whistle. So at least those who are of your belief, they will get the message. So that is how this message is being sent out. But Assam has 33% Muslim population. That is much more than UP's population. Assam's fertility rate has declined to 1.9. Look at a state like West Bengal. West Bengal also has 33 or 32 or maybe even higher percentage of Muslims in its population. In West Bengal, it's declined from 4.2 to 1.6. West Bengal actually, and Assam, West Bengal is way below the national average. Assam is below the national average. Then Jammu and Kashmir, India's only Muslim majority at this point, Union Territory. But if you look at Jammu and Kashmir has also declined from 4.5 babies per woman, that was the national average in 1981, to 1.4 now. So once again, you can see that the link between this and religion, between producing more babies and religion, is quite tenuous. In fact, it isn't just tenuous. The data itself doesn't confirm anything. And other states also. Look at Gujarat. How well has Gujarat done? Gujarat was 4.3. Gujarat has come to 1.8. Excellent. Uttarakhand has come to 1.7. Karnataka was already doing well, 2.6. So it was almost a little more than half of the national average in 1981. Now it's 1.7. Telangana was 4, 1.7. Tamil Nadu, brilliant, from 3.4 to 1.5. And then the top of the pops, you know, which state I'm talking about, and that is Kerala. Kerala is now down to about 1.6 or thereabouts. So that is actually below replacement level, which means these states will not be increasing their population. While they are not increasing their population, we can see that the Hindi states are now adding their population, and that applies to all the states, irrespective of who is governing them. That is, BJP, mostly BJP, but also the Congress. Rajasthan is now under the Congress. And that is where the problem lies. So, first of all, data tells us that there is a problem. India has a population problem, but only in the Hindi heartland. In fact, 18 states and 7 territories in India, mostly union territories in India, already have fertility rate of below 2.1%, which means they are below the replacement level. It is the big population state. So you might say, oh, UP, Bihar, Rajasthan, Madhya Pradesh, what's the big deal? But the fact is, if you add up their population, that's a lot of weight on India's overall average. And that's where population is going up, and that's what needs to be addressed. So the principle is right, but the messaging, which is not stated, so anybody who says it, Yogi Adityanath and his government would say, when did we say it's about Muslims? But the messaging is subliminal, but it's very clear. That's the reason we say, we use the metaphor dog whistle. So this is a dog whistle for Muslims. Now, does India have overpopulation? I had earlier done a Cut the Clutter episode with you, and I will share a link with you on the latest data that's come out on population, particularly from the Lancet, World Bank, etc. That actually tells us the global population has a crisis, but not a crisis of rising population. Most parts of the world have a crisis of declining population. That data showed that India's population will peak in 2046 with about 1.6 billion, 160 crore, looks like a lot of people, and then start declining. And that by 2100, India's population will be 1.09 billion, that is 109 crores only. That is about 30 crores less than it is now, which means India will also be aging, just as China is aging now. And you can see that decade upon decade, India has surprised the world on the positive side. It has surprised the world by controlling its population much faster than anybody had given it the chance for. And I will give you some data on that. Now, what is UP doing? What UP is doing is, UP State Law Commission, as I told you, they have a draft law that says two-child policy, which means anybody who has more than two children going ahead, it's not backdated. It's not as if you had four children 20 years ago, you were not qualified. Anybody who has two children now going ahead will not be able to fight local body elections. They will not be able to apply for government jobs or for receiving any government subsidy. These are many of the negative disincentives built into the bill. The bill is called UP Population Control Stabilization and Welfare Bill 2021. It's a draft, as I told you. It's a law commission draft, not a government draft, not a government elected government's draft in the assembly. Then it has some cosmetic things like there should be population control should be taught in school textbooks as a compulsory subject. That's fine. I think it will be a high scoring subject. Everybody will say the right thing and everybody will be virtue signaling, so no problem. Then those public servants, government servants who have only two children in their lives, they will get two additional increments. It's interesting, but you know, if somebody really wants to have a third child, it's two special increments, sufficient incentive to encourage them to give up that longing. I don't know. And also, when do you decide about a government employee that now you can be sure that there won't be another baby? So those are things that don't look very practical, but it is there. And then it says that if you have only up to two children, then 12 months of maternity leave, and also, believe it or not, 12 months of paternity leave if you are in government service. Also, if you have two children, then employer's contribution to national pension scheme will go up by 3%. Now, again, I don't know how this will work. Will it work until a person has two children? What happens if the person unintentionally gets married again or whatever, has a third child? Will then this 3% extra amount already paid remain with the person, or will you then ask the person to refund it with interest, etc.? Once again, does not sound very practical to me. Now, Assam had passed a law in 2019 saying some of the similar things. And in Assam also, the messaging was the same, that perhaps it's the Muslims who are adding to population. And this is a message to them that either you be disciplined like the rest, like the majority, or there will be many disincentives. I will give you some data on that also, which is quite surprising. So Population Foundation for India, which is a very respected NGO and think tank that thinks about these issues, they actually said that all these laws are flawed. And they said that India should learn from the Chinese blunder. What is the Chinese blunder? They first enforced the one child law. But then they suddenly found that their population was aging, and they simply didn't have enough young people. Then they said, all right, two children allowed. But by that time, the society had become so prosperous that many people didn't want two children. Now they say you can even go beyond two children. But most people say, why should I? Unko kaun palega? Because as a society goes up the economic and social ladder, people want fewer babies, and that is the nub of the issue. The issue is not to create incentives or disincentives for producing fewer babies or producing more babies respectively, but the key thing is to improve the economic and social status of your people. Now, India's desired level generally to keep population balance is 2.1%. India is getting there very soon. The problem is that there is an imbalance in India. So there are wide states in India. If you see the south, for example, I gave you some examples and you will see them on the table. South, Kerala, the tops, Tamil Nadu, nearly the tops, Karnataka, Andhra, Telangana, fantastic. Their population is more or less not growing anymore. In fact, if a new restructuring of parliament is carried out and parliament size is increased and seats are again allocated on the basis of population, then these states which have been disciplined and who have gone up the socio-economic ladder, they will actually suffer politically because they will become even more, they will feel like the colony of the irresponsible states in the country, which are mostly in the Hindi heartland. UP, on the other hand, I told you, India's population growth rate is 2.2, 18 states and 5 union territories, I think I said 7 earlier, so it's 5 union territories are below 2.1 already. UP, on the other hand, is 2.7, and that is a problem area for the rest of the country. Now, UP population policy 2021-30, which Yogi Adityanath released, not coincidentally, but maybe coincidentally, I don't know, around the same time as the State Law Commission's draft law. There I told you, he set the target of bringing fertility rate to 2.1 by 2026, that's 5 years from now, and 1.9, 4 years hence, that is 2030. And then once again, a lot of the same elements that you see in the law, those are being used. In fact, Jai Pratap Singh, who is the UP minister for the subject, he said that if we do this, UP's population will stabilize by 2052. Frankly, if they take their fertility rate down to 1.9 by 2030, their population will stabilize much earlier than 2052. But as usual, you see the political messaging and some people have taken the bait. For example, there is Shafiqur Rahman Burke, who's a Samajwadi Party MP, who said, oh, what happens if, like Narendra Modi, Mohan Bhagwat and Yogi Adityanath, everybody decides not to have children? If nobody has children and tomorrow there is a war, from where will India find people, soldiers to fight for India? The fact is that China has controlled its population a long time back, and yet it has no shortage of soldiers to fight for the country. It doesn't work like that. And plus, today's armies are not lashkars and lashkars of millions of people who go out. This is not a mob. So this is nonsensical. But the fact is that people are taking the bait. In this case, this Muslim leader from SP has taken the bait. Samajwadi Party, etc., have been very careful to say that this is anti-poor. They are not saying that this is anti-Muslim yet, but the hope that the BJP has that with the elections coming up, this becomes a Muslim issue, as if Muslims are protesting any action over their having more children. And if that happens, then it will become a Hindu-Muslim issue, because ultimately BJP wins by polarization. Now, there are some other projections also. For example, National Commission on Population In fact, we'll be carrying an article on the print from Rami Chhabra, who used to be a member of the National Commission on Population. They gave their projections in 2016. And they showed that between 2011 and 2021, in that decade, once again we wait for the census to validate the figures, in that decade, India's population rose by a total of 12.5%. Now, this is compounded, as you know, so don't ask me to calculate, but roughly, it averaged to about 1.25% per year. They expect that 2021-31, in the coming decade, India's overall population increase will be 8.4% overall. So you can again average it out over 10 years, it's like 0.8% per year. I suspect if I look at other data that's coming up and the way a lot of India is changing, including UP and Bihar and Madhya Pradesh and Rajasthan, I think India will do even better than this. Now we have other sources of data. The Lancet paper on which I had done an earlier episode of Cut the Clutter, that link you will have, so you can take a look at that. But National Family Health Survey 4, that showed that, say, among Hindu women, 75% had no desire to have a baby after they had had two babies. 19% of Hindu women, actually, even after one baby, had no desire to have any more babies. Now, I will take you into slightly finer analysis of this data. Women wanting a kid after the second kid. And I am now, because of the stereotype is that it's the Muslim women and Muslim families that want more babies than Hindus. Now, again, there is a big difference. There is a big diversity state to state. If you look at Bihar, for example, and these are from National Family Health Survey 4, which came out in 2016. Recently, we got some advanced estimates of NHFS 5, but only from a few states. Bihar, 38.9% Muslim women say that they don't want another child if they've had two children already. Among Hindus in Bihar, that number is 61.4. So you can see the difference between Hindu families and Muslim families in Bihar. That's a reality. Similarly, if you look at Jharkhand, which was a part of Bihar, although Jharkhand Muslim population is not that high, Muslim women, 52.4% say, no, I've had two babies, that's enough. 78% Hindu women say, I've had two babies, enough, no more. Uttar Pradesh, 53% Muslim women say, two babies, no more. 75.5% Hindu women say, enough babies, two are enough, no more. Then you go on to other states. Now, if you come to J&K, which is India's only Muslim majority state, then the number of Muslim women not wanting a third child is higher than in Bihar and Uttar Pradesh, which is significant. It's 58.1%. Of course, among Hindus, it's even higher. It's almost 84%. Kerala, again, 60.4%. Again, in Kerala, among Muslim women also it goes up, because as you go up the socio-economic ladder, you want fewer babies. Kerala, 60.4%. Muslims, Hindus, almost 90%. Then come to Assam. Assam and West Bengal are actually the tops for Muslim women. And these are the two states in India which, after Jammu and Kashmir, have the highest percentage of Muslims. In Assam, 71% of Muslim women say, two babies, no more. In West Bengal, 85% of Muslim women say, two babies, no more. This is not some faltu survey. This is National Family Health Survey. Of course, in both the states, Hindus have high numbers. Assam, 82. West Bengal, 94. But the gap is not that much. And you can see that whatever is working on the ground, maybe it's primary health care, maybe it is the messaging, maybe it's literacy, maybe it's awareness, that difference has been now getting bridged quite rapidly. Now, I will also show you some other data which tells you the difference, that there has been a difference between Hindu and Muslim fertility rates, but that gap is now narrowing. For example, if you see the comparison between NHFS 3 and 4, 3 was 2005-6, 4 was 15-16. Hindus have gone from 3.86 to 3.29 per lifetime, whereas Muslims have gone from 4.8 to 4.11. What that means is that for the Hindus, both have declined, but the decline for the Muslims is a bit more than the decline for Hindus, which means the gap is being narrowed. The Muslims still have a slightly higher fertility rate, but the gap is narrowing, and the Muslims are narrowing the gap because they are changing faster, because they were already at a much higher level. Bihar and UP, see carefully. In Bihar and UP, the difference between, say, Hindu families, Hindu fertility rate and Muslim fertility rate gap was the highest, but also the filling of the gap has been the widest, which means there is progress in the right direction. And I don't know if it will help now to politicize this issue, because then people may start saying, see, it is the BJP government that wants you Muslims to produce fewer babies, so why listen to them? We saw some of that nonsense happen with vaccinations also. Now look at West Bengal, for example. West Bengal, Hindus had declined in this period in terms of fertility rate by 0.29%. Muslims had declined by 1.07%. J&K, Hindus by 0.31%, Muslims by 0.46%. And Kerala, Hindus by 0.11%, because Kerala was always very evolved, and Muslims by 0.6%. So this tells you once again confirms to you and gives you evidence, if evidence was needed, that this is a movement in the right direction. Now, having told you all this very serious stuff, I will also tell you something a little bit fun. Today is the anniversary of Dara Singh, the great wrestler. And I was quite happy to see that his name was trending today on social media. Now, see, he was the Rustam-e-Zaman. He was seen to be the world champion. He was the world champion in professional wrestling, which is different from Olympic wrestling. In professional wrestling, 130 kilos, anything between 127 and 130 kilos, super heavyweight. He beat everybody in the world. Everybody in the world would challenge him and come to India, including a man called King Kong. King Kong was a man of a sort of mixed up nationality. He was Emily Zaja, part Indian, part Hungarian, part Australian citizen in the end. Dara Singh made his big fame by flooring King Kong, by beating him by a fall. And Dara Singh then rose and he became a big film star and later became a member of parliament, the first Indian sportsman to be nominated to Rajya Sabha, and also the chairman of All India Jat Mahasabha. So BJP patronized him and used him also to get closer to the Jat community. He did many films, but so I will not tell you his filmography, but I will tell you that for some reason films loved him as a god. So he acted as Lord Shiva in a film called Har Har Mahadev. He acted as soldier in many films. He acted as Hanuman all the time, including in Ramanand Sagar's serial. And through our childhood, we would see these rickshaws coming in to promote his movies, saying Dara Singh ka naya shahkar ladai maar kutai se bharpoor. That is Dara Singh's new magnum opus, full of fight scenes. And in 16 films, his heroine was Mumtaz, the same Mumtaz who later became a top class heroine. Until then, she was seen as Dara Singh's favorite co-star in what was then called B-grade fight cinema. And gods, any mythological, needed him to play something. So if Hanuman wasn't needed, then Shiva, I told you. Also, in a film called Krishna Krishna, he acted as Balaram, who was Lord Krishna's older, much stronger brother, who was also a wrestler. Much before India began winning wrestling medals at the Olympics, he made wrestling popular in India. His brother, Sardar Singh Randhawa, also known as just Randhawa usually, he was also a wrestler, became an actor. He actually got married to Mumtaz's sister, Mallika Askari. Among the many famous films in which he acted was Sikandar Azam, where he was obviously Sikandar Azam, Alexander himself, and he looked quite fetching in his sort of Greek warrior's regalia. Prithviraj Kapoor was the porous in that film, and that is the film from which I think a song is still quite popular, Jahan Dal Dal Pe Sone Ki Chidiya De Karti Hai Basera, Wo Bharat Desh Hai Mera. And just as with Kapil and everybody else, there was a folklore about his dialogue, and I do remember some, because he always had this heavy Punjabi twang when he spoke, Rani ji, mera koda le aao. Or he would say, baagon mein phool to bahut hote hain, lekin gulab, gulab hi hota hai. So all of us had stories and jokes and stuff about him, just as it was the case with Ajit much later.